Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Youth Beat Radio on WCRS FM. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Today, a couple of Upper Arlington students explain why they wish schools would cut out the busy work, and we hear one girl's story about battling eating disorders. We also get thoughts on Cleveland's cursed sports history and much more. Stay tuned.
Children, listen to hear sleigh bells in the snow.
First, Gianna Cantwell indulges in the spirit of the season by talking about her family's holiday traditions.
It's getting to be that time of year again that is usually referred to as the most wonderful time of the year. With the holiday season just around the corner, people's stress level is at an all-time high, although it is balanced with just the right amount of holiday cheer in the air. Like most families, my household is filled with many traditions that we carry out throughout the season. We like to begin the season with food preparation for Thanksgiving. This year, we will be traveling out to Indiana to spend the day with my dad's side of the family. But in the past, we have had a different routine. The day usually starts with waking up close to noon with the smell of sweet potatoes in the air. I then end up realizing that we have overslept and missed the turkey trot yet again. Every year, my mom is motivated to participate, and every year we end up not going, which is honestly fine with me. We then proceed to watch the rest of the Macy's Day Parade and snack on anything we can get our hands on until the big feast. Finally, when everything is done, we all sit down and enjoy a lovely Thanksgiving feast as a family. My parents, my two brothers, and I. A couple weeks pass, and with a good amount of snow on the ground, our Christmas spirit is at its peak. With all the Christmas shopping coming to an end, we proceed to spend the next 3 days relaxing and wishing that we were in Colorado enjoying the great ski weather. The next few days is filled with excitement towards Christmas Day, until we finally reach Christmas Eve. We spend the night over at my Nana's and Opa's house, enjoying our first round of Christmas presents and stuffing our face full of Christmas ham. As we get home, my twin and I proceed to grab our pillows and sleeping bags and head down to the basement. Although we are 17 years old and our older brother is 20, every Christmas Eve, since I can remember, my brothers and I spend the night in the same room playing video games, watching movies, and eating as much food as we could smuggle past our parents. We wake up the next morning anxious to begin opening gifts, but give our parents a couple extra hours to sleep. We love seeing what is under the tree for us and can't wait to open it all. We start with the stockings and then proceed to open our gifts in order of oldest to youngest. The rest of the day is spent using our new gifts and relaxing while watching movies. We start the day off with a Christmas story and end the day with the always funny Christmas Vacation. In a couple days, New Year's will come and go, and we will begin the year as motivated as the last to work to achieve our New Year's resolutions. It's always sad when it comes time to change my radio station from all my Christmas music back to my usual favorites, but I'm always able to reminisce on all the great memories that we just created. It really is the most wonderful time of the year.
How you doing? I'm Jack Wormholtz, and I'm sitting alongside Nate Wallace. And Nate is a student here at the high school, and I'm going to ask him a few questions today about the busy work. Nate, glad you can be here.
Glad to be here.
All right, Nate, I'm just going to get right into it. First and foremost, is the majority of your schoolwork busy work?
Well, I'd say about half to three-fourths of my work that I get every night is probably busy work. Maybe like Spanish and math, usually got some busy work almost every night.
All right, I understand. Now, does this bother you at all?
Yeah, it does bother me because it just wastes time out of my day that I could be doing other things. But instead, I have to make sure I get the work done because it's going to be worth points.
All right. In your opinion, is busy work beneficial to your schooling? Why or why not?
It's really not because I'm just doing it to complete it. I'm not, like, comprehending it or anything or learning anything from it.
Next question is it difficult to find meaning in homework when it doesn't seem applicable to the real world?
It really is, because when I sit down to start my homework, I think to myself, why am I going to need to know how to do this in the real world?
I completely understand, Nate. And the next question is, which classes give you the most busy work, you know, classes that students should look out for?
Yeah, I'd say to look out for Spanish and math, mostly because in Spanish you have a workbook that you basically leave all your homework out of, and it's really basically busy work. Also, in math, you get random textbook problems every night. So that's what I would say.
Definitely, Nate. I remember when I was in school, math was the subject that I got most of my homework in. My final question is going to be, does busy work cloud your mind and make it more difficult to study for tests?
I'd say sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. But for some subjects, such as like science or math, we get a ton of papers, and it's hard to look through all those different papers and look at the ones that we need to look over for the test or quiz.
Thank you, Nate. And coming up after the break, I'm going to be sitting down and talking with Kyle Kellogg at Upper Arlington Junior.
You are listening to Youth Beat Radio. Just like a sister or a brother.
And we're back, sitting here with Kyle Kellogg. Kyle, thanks for coming on today.
Yeah, no problem.
All right, Kyle, here we go. My first question is the majority of your schoolwork busy work?
I think all of it's busy work, to be completely honest with you. I mean, the fact that we don't have homework is kind of nice, but the in-class is just absurd.
All right, Kyle, I understand. My next question is, does this bother you?
Yeah, it does bother me because I'm here to learn. And with all these worksheets and in-class work that pretty much mean nothing to me, you know, it's not really fair.
Understood. And in your opinion, is busy work beneficial to your schooling? Why or why not?
Busy work is not beneficial to us just for the fact that it's busy work, meaning the teachers didn't have a planned assignment, so they're giving us work that doesn't mean anything to us.
Kyle, we got two questions left. Let's finish off strong.
All right, let's do it.
All right, next up is which classes give you the most busy work?
By far English class. It started off from the get-go. Freshman year, we just had to sit down and read. And it's got progressively worse. Now I'm in my junior year, and it's like I'm still seeing the same poems over and over and over again. Then we have to rewrite the sentences, you know, punctuate and whatnot. It's just terrible.
Good answer, Kyle. All right, here's the last question. Does busy work cloud your mind and make it more difficult to study?
It does to a degree. I mean, my head's already in cloud from the get-go. But just looking at the busy work, it makes me less focused. And when I lose track of focus, it's a bad sight to see. So I'd like to see a decrease in the busy work that we were given here.
All right, Kyle. Well, Kyle's an honest person, and that was an honest answer right there.
I certainly remember dealing with what felt like busy work in high school. But, reflecting about a brief moment over the summer, Matt Steffen offers a different perspective on school for those of us who are lucky enough to attend top-rated districts.
Many people don't take school seriously, or don't respect the education that they receive. I know I did not respect it until recently. Over the summer, I went to a camp with 50 other kids from UA, where we met kids from all over Ohio, from other states, and from around the world. However, there was one conversation that stuck with me out of the many I had there. At one point in the week, my friends and I were talking to kids from somewhere in Tennessee. We talked to them about sports and how their week was going, but then somehow we got on the topic of school. As my friends were complaining about classes or teachers they had, I remember a comment from a freshman kid from Tennessee. He felt that only one of his teachers, out of all of them, cared about his education. This comment made me stop and think, and it ultimately made me change the way I thought about school. After going to about the same classes every year, every day, for almost 12 years, I really have begun to take my education for granted, and never realized how well-off students in UA are. Imagine teachers not caring about if you succeeded or failed, or imagine if teachers didn't try to explain new lessons thoroughly during class. You'd care more about your future life than about what you were doing after school or on the weekend. Being in such a good school district has hid the fact that there are other teachers who don't care about their students. Just one comment this summer made me stop and realize how I shouldn't take school for granted, because if I lived somewhere else, I wouldn't be the same person I am today.
Next up, Olivia Ahatz finds out how the media contributed to one student's distorted body image and eventual anorexia.
Media has distorted body image from the beginning. How do we go from having a curvy Marilyn Monroe to a sick, thin Barbie as the ideal pretty woman? The question all girls seek to answer is, why aren't they considered beautiful? How do the pressures from the media affect the way you view yourself and others? An anonymous source helps me understand the struggles of having an eating disorder as she battles the question, am I beautiful?
It built up over time through like a matter of years and even months, but food just becomes this whole different thing because it actually becomes an obsession. You focus on it daily because you dissect the nutrition of it. And so you weigh yourself as much as you can, and then there's calories part of it where you just calculate everything. And then when you find yourself acting on the thoughts, you're just, your body just shows these results where you have so much hair loss and you're cold all the time and this energy level is just so weak. And you get comments about, like, what is going on, but you look in the mirror and you don't see it at all. But you can, like, try on clothes and it just feels so much different. And then the only thing that, like, motivates you to just restrict was when you look at those magazines and it's like, you have to be like that. And so everything just affects you daily. Don't you like when you're fleeing? I like not to hear keys. Only hold till your coffee warm. And so you can see them, how they're like physically depleted too, and like they don't have this light in their face that you see, and everyone is just not really themselves almost. And just like, because everyone has this distorted imagery of themselves, like I could look at one of them and see how they're so skinny, but they still like won't eat, and everyone just thought the same thing. And so that was just really hard to see, even though that was, like, what my mind was doing. It's kind of just felt like this, it's an everyday battle, but you still have to have these constant thoughts that you have to fight in your head. And so that's that reminding yourself that everyone is created differently and that their metabolism is different, that they're going to eat differently. They've grown up with different ways they eat even. And so that's just that reminder. And you look at the media and you remind yourself that, like, Barbie just, I mean, she wouldn't even be able to stand because of how she was created, that her body's just too disproportional. But really, it's just best if you, like, try to avoid looking in those magazines when you know it's just going to cause the wrong thoughts. So you just want to listen to yourself and just figure out what's a lie and what's not. And just remember that you're beautiful and no one can tell you different. All you want to do is just sleep or just find ways to pass time. So you just can feel normal even though you don't. And just let the places I went to or the things that I did to myself were just things that I just never imagined. Your body is fearfully and wonderfully made, and you're beautiful in every way, and just fight those thoughts. I mean, those people aren't even real. Remember that you are beautiful and your body functions best when it's provided with the food that it needs.
Ahatz surveyed females from her high school and found that none of the girls interviewed thought themselves beautiful on a regular basis. This is Youth Beat Radio. It's safe to say that Cleveland sports covets some of the country's most die-hard fans, yet their sports history is full of disappointments. Sam West and Wyatt West elaborate on some of the most defeating moments in Cleveland sports history and how Clevelanders recover from these moments with undying spirit.
Hello, I'm Sam West.
And I'm Wyatt West.
Today we're going to talk to you about what it's like to be a Cleveland sports fan.
Both of our parents grew up in Elyria, Ohio, which is about a 30-minute drive from Cleveland. being from that area, both my parents, especially my dad, root for the major professional sports there, like the Cavs and the Browns. For those who know something about sports, they know that Cleveland is a horrendous sports city. It hasn't won a major championship in 47 years, dating back to when the Cleveland Browns won the NFL championship. The Super Bowl wasn't even around then.
They played the Baltimore Colts. Yes, that team still existed. Since then, Cleveland has gone through some very heartbreaking events. And one of the first ones is Red Right 88, an event we weren't even alive for, but our dad has told us about many times.
So as the story goes, the Browns were trailing 14-12 with less than a minute in the game against the Oakland Raiders in a divisional playoff game. The Browns had the ball on the Raiders' 13-yard line and were positioned for a potential game-winning field goal. So they called a timeout, and Browns quarterback Brian Sipe conferred with the head coach, who then called a pass play, Red Right 88, and instructed Sipe, if the play was anything less than wide open, to throw the ball to Lake Erie.
So when the play began, Sipe dropped back and chose to pass it to the tight end Ozzie Newman. However, the pass was intercepted, of course, in the end zone by Raiders defensive back Mike Davis. This is just one example of Cleveland sports bad luck. Of course, the Raiders went on to win the Super Bowl. There's one more play that just perfectly exemplifies all that is Cleveland sports horrible luck. It is the drive.
The drive refers to an offensive series in the fourth quarter of the AFC Championship game, played between the Denver Broncos and, of course, the Cleveland Browns. Legendary Broncos quarterback John Elway led his team in a span of 5 minutes and 2 seconds, 98 yards, to tie the game with 37 seconds left in regulation. Of course, Denver went on to win the game in overtime with a field goal, 23-20.
Obviously, Red Right 88 and the drive were both awful plays and possibly prevented Cleveland from winning any sort of championship and continuing a very long championship drought that has continued this very day. But it's not these plays that Clevelanders hate the most. It's definitely the people. These two people, Art Modell and LeBron James.
These two people have become probably the most hated figures in all of Cleveland. First off, Art Modell in 1996 left the longtime home of the Cleveland Browns and took the team to Baltimore, Maryland.
When Art Modell left in 1996, the Browns didn't play football for 3 straight years until 1999. But, of course, once they came back, they're horrible. And they still are.
This act has caused Art Modell to become one of the most hated figures in Cleveland and in all of Cleveland sports.
Art Modell, for the longest time, seemed like public enemy number one to Cleveland sports fans. But it wasn't until 2010 that a certain man, NBA player, made the decision and left Cleveland.
This man was, of course, LeBron James. He came straight from high school to the Cleveland Cavaliers and has been called one of the greatest basketball players of all time. He took the Cavs to multiple playoffs and 2 NBA finals. This man seemed to be the only beam of light in what was otherwise an extremely dark sports history in Cleveland.
He then decided to take his certain talents to South Beach, which completely enraged Clevelanders. They burned his jerseys on the street. They tore down the giant poster of him. I have never forgiven him so far, and I still do not like him.
Not only was this train to South Beach what really enraged Clevelanders, it's also his seemingly lack of effort for the last games of the NBA Finals that kind of made us angry.
It was also really just the way he handled it, like the entire TV special, the decision, look at me, all the media attention on me, that really just pushed Clevelanders over the edge.
While all this doom and gloom may hide what Cleveland is truly about, everything isn't so bad. I mean, the Indians in 2007 made a pretty good playoff run and almost made it to the World Series. And last year, they start off very well in the season. And this year, every Clevelander is still ever hopeful of how the Indians will do.
Despite all these losses, hardships, players leaving, teams leaving, Clevelanders really have a humility that not many other cities have.
In our last segment, Shalice Riley shares the story of a terrifying moment she recently experienced that led her to an epiphany about the choices we make in life.
Today, I had a realization. This realization came to me in a very unconventional way, but since when do realizations happen normally? It's not like the great minds of the world were sitting in their studies counting the books on their shelves and suddenly realizations hit them. No, realizations happen when you're expecting the least amount of excitement. Here was mine. 30,252 people between the ages of 15 and 24 died in 2009. This means that around 83 teens and young adults were dying each day of that year. What I realized was that, as a 15-year-old, I fear entering this new lifestyle of big decisions and life-threatening activity. I understand that most of what happens to you is based on your own personal choices, but I don't know if I'm ready for that sort of responsibility. I'm a dumb teenager. I make misguided choices daily, and while I'm learning from these mistakes, they still happen frequently. Well, like I said, this epiphany, if you will, did not hit me as I was at home doing my nails. No, this happened in the parking lot of Taco Bell. After staying late to work on a project, my friends, who are now driving, offered to pick me up and take me to Taco Bell to meet them with a handful of other friends as well. The car was packed, but at least each of us could throw our backpacks in the trunk, and we still had our own seatbelt to our own personal use. Well, as we were heading out after a bit of socializing, we realized a dilemma. If we all were to go to the park, we would have to sit on each other's laps, and since the cops in our area are crazy strict, we were scared to have them pull us over. Then someone made a joke about two people going in the trunk. At first it was a joke, until my friend turned to me and said, "Wait, we could do it? Come on, it'll be fun, like in the movies." I knew I shouldn't. I knew this was unsafe, and obviously I should say no, but that's what made it fun. I knew I had the choice in the palm of my hand, and I chose wrong. After a moment of thought that was obviously not long enough, I smiled big and nervous, so she grabbed the keys from the driver and we ran to the car. My friends were all laughing at us, not really thinking we were serious. I didn't even think we were fully serious. Then she popped the trunk open and climbed in, cooing to me like a child to climb in. So I did. The backpacks made us cram together uncomfortably, and we could barely shift in such tight quarters. Someone laughed and closed the trunk door, and with a click, it was dark and we couldn't move. Then my friend started to scream. It took me a moment to realize what she was saying, but when I processed it, I froze. "I have the keys," she was yelling. "Why did you close it? I have the keys." My breathing accelerated as I realized what had happened. We were jammed tight, unable to move, as my friend sat outside the trunk, screaming directions at us and banging on the outside. But no matter if they were trying to help or not, I couldn't even tell because all I could process is that we were stuck together, unable to move, and my friend was screaming. All she kept saying was, "Guys, guys, we're stuck. Get us out. I have the keys. I have the keys." Finally, I knew it was to me. I was the only person there for her, so I had to get her to stop screaming so I could get my friend's directions. "Stop, stop, it's okay. All trunks have a latch to open them from the inside. It's okay, we'll get out. Breathe." Finally, she started to realize that since she was the one with more arm space, that it was up to her to feel for the handle. As she got quieter, I heard the people outside's directions. "Look for the handle. It's on the right side. Feel for it." So she followed suit. My heart was racing, thinking of all that could happen if we couldn't find it, or if it didn't work. Finally, after what felt like years, a line of light rose from the darkness and grew rapidly, spreading everywhere. She had done it. My friend had found the emergency handle and set us free. The good news was that everything was all right. The fear was short-lived. However, it struck home with me. As I sat there with her screaming in my ear, her quick, nervous breath on my face, I realized I could have stopped this. If only I had told her I didn't want to do this. This is when my epiphany hit, that I am responsible for my choices. No one else, me. And I control how my life will go, not my friends and not even my family anymore. Me. Now I must face that the results are my fault, and I must find ways to deal with them. Of course, I still have my parental guidance, but they no longer are spoon-feeding me the right choices. Now they are my own. I feel that this is a coming-of-age type moment for me. As if I have finally realized that this new concept that each teen must realize at some point. Overall, I've learned that each of us are our own person, created by a tangled web of genetics, upbringing, and millions of little choices we make daily to reflect the character we want to build for ourselves.
This has been another episode of Youth Beat Radio. You can check us out on the web at youthbeat.osu.edu, and you can also find us on Facebook. You can send us feedback, story ideas, and more at youthbeat@osu.edu. I'm your host, Anna Siriano. Thank you for listening, and have a happy holiday.
Should all acquaintance be forgot and never brought to mind? Should all acquaintance be forgot and old lang syne? For old lang
YouthBeat Radio is produced by youth from Central Ohio high schools, youth groups, and universities. It is sponsored by the School of Environment and Natural Resources at The Ohio State University, Ohio State University Extension, and local sponsors. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the station or the sponsors.